Impressed by Srila Prabhupada's scholarship and saintliness, His Holiness became a member of the Krishna Consciousness Committee in Gainesville, Florida, in the year 1971. And shortly thereafter, he was initiated as Srila Prabhupada's disciple. In 1972, he began traveling throughout the United States, distributing Srila Prabhupada's books and lecturing in colleges and universities. This continued until 1974, when His Holiness became directly involved in publication of Srila Prabhupada's book in English and in Spanish. In early 1978, His Holiness Birkrishna Goswami Maharaj entered the renounced order of life, there is sannyas, in Lima, that is in Peru. In 1975, this is correct? 1975, last time I made a mistake. In 1975, he began to work on the GBC Governing Body Commission. 1995. At present, his zone includes Fiji and Slovenia. Thank you very much. His Holiness Birkrishna Goswami Maharaj ki
jai.
Prabhupada ki jai. Thank you very much, Govardhan, for inviting me here and giving such a nice introduction. So first we'll chant Jai Ramadava. Jai Ramadava.
Jai Hunarimanu Va Kunyari Hari Jai Hunarimanu Va Kunyari Hari
Omaganad, here's a card title. Omaganad Tamiranda Shah, Ganjana Shilakaya Chakshur Miditam, Yenatasmai Shigurveda. I offer my respectful obeisances unto the lotus feet of my spiritual master, His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, who so kindly opened my eyes with the torchlight of knowledge while I was blinded in the darkness of ignorance. So, tonight we're going to tell you an interesting story about an astrologer. How's that? Because we've been talking a little bit about astrology recently. Actually, what we've been talking about recently about astrology is that if you chant Hare Krishna, guess what happens? All the stars become auspicious for you. Even Rahu becomes auspicious. Saturn becomes auspicious. I was telling this story earlier today to the devotees that once upon a time, Hanuman was there, and it came time for Hanuman's Saturn period, Sunny. And Hanuman said, of course, you could sit on my head and do whatever you want, my dear Saturn. And then Hanuman began to put all sorts of things on top of Saturn. And Saturn was getting crushed. And Saturn said, save me, save me. And then Hanuman said, okay, you have to go away. And he also said that anyone who worships Ram and Hanuman will only have to experience their Saturn period for a few seconds. How's that? So therefore you should worship Hanuman. So anyway, so sometimes people have great faith in astrologers, and astrologers used to be very expert. I'll tell you how expert they used to be, and there's many different stories. Once upon a time, there was a great devotee, Sanatan Goswami, and Sanatan Goswami was escaping from prison. Now, the reason he was in prison was not, he was not a dacoit or a gunda. He was in prison because he wanted to be a devotee, and the government at that particular time didn't want him to be a devotee. And he was working for the government. So anyway, so he escaped from prison, and as he was escaping from prison, he came to a hotel keeper. And he said to the hotel keeper, can you please help us over the mountains? And the hotel keeper had an astrologer. And the astrologer looked at his horoscope and at the palms of everybody, and he discovered that Sanatana Goswami, what did you arrange for her? Sanatana Goswami had 8 gold coins with him, which Sanatana Goswami didn't even know about because his servant was carrying those 8 gold coins. And so Sanatana Goswami went to the hotel keeper and said, you can have the gold coins. Just take care of me. And the hotel keeper said, normally we kill people, but since you're giving us the gold coins, we'll help you over the mountains. No problem. So that's one instance of an astrologer, a successful astrological prediction. Another instance is in the case of His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. And when Srila Prabhupada was just born, they did in birth ceremony, Namakarana, and the astrologer calculated his life and said, at the age of 70, he will cross the ocean and preach Krishna consciousness and open up 108 temples. So the astrologer was very accurate in that regard. One other story I'll tell about accuracy. So I'm not trying to convince you all to go to an astrologer, because nowadays you won't find a good one, and secondly, if you're chanting Hare Krishna, it just negates everything anyway. So another story is, once upon a time in Bengal, there was a king who was also a gunda, that one. And this king, he had expert astrologers who basically told him who has the money, where the money is, where the gold is, etc. So once upon a time, there were devotees, 3 devotees, who were coming from Vrindavan carrying the books of the Goswamis. And there was Shamananda, Narottama Das Thakur, and Srinivas Acharya. And they were carrying it in the chest on a ox cart, because there were no cars or trucks at that particular point. This is over 500 years ago. And so this king consulted his astrologers. He said, where is their money? Where is there something? Extreme wealth. And the astrologers did their calculations. Oh, there's an ox cart coming with a lot of extreme wealth. And so the king arranged for all of his associates to steal from the ox cart. They stole this trunk. It was supposed to have a lot of gold or whatever, you know, wealth in it. And they brought it back, and the king opened up this jar, this cabinet. And he looked, and he saw, what did he see? The handwriting of Rupa and Sanatana Goswami, which is like pearls on a third. Beautiful handwriting, the king thought. Oh, I made a big mistake. Now, eventually, the devotees were feeling very much distraught that they had lost this valuable, in the books of the Goswamis. In those days, books were not printed on a printing press, at least there. They were handwritten and copied. So they were feeling completely depressed because they'd gone all the way across India, bringing the books of the Goswamis from Vrindavan to West Bengal. So later on, the king, this king was also a devotee. He was having Bhagavatam class in the morning. So in those days, even the dacoits were devotees. Pretty good. So what happened is that Srinivasacharya, one of the three devotees, was attending the Bhagavatam class of the king. And the king, the previous night, had a dream that this great devotee would appear before him. And Srinivasacharya corrected what the preacher was giving or saying in the Bhagavatam class. And then the king understood that that was the person whose books he had stolen. And the king surrendered, and he became a great devotee, took initiation, and his wife took initiation. Leads to our situation. And this is a story that Lord Chaitanya told to Sanatana Goswami. Astrologers are sometimes known as Sarvagya, which means someone who knows everything. Sarvagya. And in this particular story, the astrologer is a metaphor for the guru. Because the guru is also Sarvagya. What we mean by Sarvagya is not that he knows all the details of everything. Like you may ask the guru, how do you fix your car? And the guru is not going to know that. Or maybe he will know it, but not necessarily. But he knows the purpose of everything. I mean, what's more intelligent to know the details? Build the largest temple in the world, the Temple of 80 Planetariums. So anyway, so Henry Ford, he was blasphemed once. You know, they accused him of being less intelligent because he didn't know so much about engineering. He didn't know mathematics so much. Okay, they accused him of that. And so he went to court with a whole lawsuit. I guess he was suing them. And he said, I can prove that I know more than the engineers. And so Prabhupada told the story, a very interesting story. And then what happened is that he showed everybody a whole row of buttons. And he says, if I want to know something, just push this button and an engineer. That's the most important question to ask, isn't it? KME. Who am I? Because we don't know who we are. We think, what do we think? We think, well, I'm Fijian or American or Indian or whatever. I'm male or female. I'm a human being. But that's not who we are, is it? Because these are temporary upadhis or designations. As stated in the Vedic literature, sarva upadhi vinirmuktam tat purataynanyam. Where we gave the introduction of the astrologer. So he said, once upon a time, there was a very poor man. And this poor man went to an astrologer. He said, I'm very poor. What should I do in life? And the astrologer said, actually, you're not poor. I see a lot of money here in your horoscope. And that money is supposed to come from an inheritance. Inheritance means your parents left you something or whatever like that. So he said, but what happened is that that inheritance was hidden by your parents. This is actually a metaphorical story. So just like all of us, we may be rich in a material sense, you know, have a lot of money, we may be poor in a material sense, but actually we don't know who we are, we're poor. Of spiritual advancement from one lifetime to another. Everything else you lose. So you should keep your wealth where, or you could just have the type of wealth that you don't lose. So this is a metaphorical story. Anyway, so the astrologer says, basically, I can tell you where this wealth is. Because he's like the guru, remember? He said it's like the guru. And the astrologer tells him where the wealth is through three different or branches of knowledge. One is called Sambandha, the one's called Abhideya, the other one's Prayojana. So what that means, to put it in simple language, Sambandha means basically who you are. Abhideya means what you do about it. And Prayojana means where do you go once you do what you're supposed to do with the knowledge. So this is the guru. He teaches on all three levels. So on this particular level, you know, the sambandha with the finding the money would be, you know, you have a connection with your father and he left you money. Then abhideya would be where you look for it. And prayojana is, you hit the jackpot. You have that word here? In the jackpot.
Yeah.
In the jackpot. Okay. So then he describes where you're supposed to dig for this hidden wealth. And of course, we're talking about spirituality here. He says, don't dig on the side. Be someone who is interested in karmakanja rituals. Karmakanja rituals means in the Vedas that you do different rituals for attaining either the heavenly planets or getting more wealth, material wealth in this world. And that's not where your real wealth lies. This is mundane morality. Just like, give an example of the Mahabharata of Yudhisthira Maharaj. He was into mundane morality when Krishna told him to lie. Krishna said to him, ultimately, of course, Krishna made a trick. He told the Bhim saying, you kill an elephant named Tom. And then Yudhisthira actually misrepresented the truth, which is the same as a lie, by saying, Bhimsen has killed Ashwatthama, the elephant. So that's like lying at the same time not lying. And then as a result, his goal of life is. That's not who we are. That's not the ultimate goal. Because even if you do karmakanda and you go to the heavenly planets, guess what? Shine punya marcha lokam vishanti. You come down again to this earth planet. It's temporary. So don't try for this. So then the astrologer said it's not in the West. Concoction, you know, just trying to figure things out, speculation, mental speculation, thinking, I know, I can figure out what the absolute truth is. I will be, there's this word, eclectic. Anyone's heard of that word before, eclectic? Most people now in modern society are very eclectic in their spirituality. What does that mean? That means they take a little bit from here, a little bit from there, and they mix it in a witch's brew. And that becomes their philosophy. Like, any of you here ever read Macbeth, Shakespeare? Boil, boil, double trouble, cauldron burn, cauldron bubble, eye of newt, you know. So they take a little philosophy from one place, little philosophy. It's called smorgasbord. That's a Swedish word. That means when you go to a restaurant, you pick different things up, whatever you like to eat. But that doesn't work either. So then the astrologer said, don't dig in the north because there's a great serpent there. And that great serpent is Mayavad philosophy. Mayavad philosophy means to think that you're God or that ultimately you merge into the existence of God. That's not our nature. Even if you do somehow or other enter into the Brahman, the effulgence of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the Bhagavatam says, Aruya Kritshena Param Padam. Ultimately, you fall down. It's not permanent. But he said, your real wealth is in the East. And what is in the East? Krishna consciousness. The understanding, we're going to go through Sambandha again. Sambandha, that I am not this body. I'm a spirit soul. I am part and parcel of Krishna. I'm eternal servant of Krishna. And Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. All the incarnations and expansions come from Krishna. As Krishna says, as it said in the Bhagavatam, Eti Changsa, Talat Pumsa, Krishna is Tu Bhagavan Swayam. And Krishna has multifarious energies. That's Sambandha knowledge. Knowing about the material world, it's an energy of Krishna. It's temporarily manifest. And then Abhideya. What's the Abhideya knowledge the Guru teaches? It's called Bhakti Yoga. Now you may think you can do other types of yoga, you know, Karma Yoga, Jnana Yoga, Hatha Yoga. They're all meant, ultimately, to come to Bhakti Yoga. But Krishna in the Gita says, 49th verse, 6th chapter, he says, Yoginam api sarvesham madgatein antaratmana sradavan bhajate yomam same yuktatamomataha. They're all yogis, the best yogis of Bhakti. And what is Bhakti Yoga? It means to serve Krishna with devotion, but right now we may not have that devotion. So then you have to practice having the devotion. It's like if you're learning an instrument, you practice first. You don't become a virtuoso immediately. So that's Bhakti Yoga in practice, which is called Vaidhi Bhakti, actually Sadhana Bhakti, and Vaidhi Bhakti means there's some rules. And then you become spontaneous in your execution. That's called Raghunuga Bhakti. Then you come to the point of Bhava Bhakti, experiencing ecstasy. And ultimately, you reach Krishna Prema, which is Panchama Purusharth. It's the highest goal, the fifth goal of human life. And that's Bhakti Yoga. And then when you perform that Bhakti Yoga and you rise to the highest level of Bhakti Yoga, the Guru teaches you about Prayojana. And what is Prayojana? That is, in one sense, going back to home, back to Godhead, living with Krishna eternally, but understanding your eternal spiritual nature. What does that mean? That each and every one of us is a spiritual entity who has a specific relationship with Krishna. And one of five different types in the spiritual world. Either the passive adora, shantaras, or your friend, your servant of Krishna, dasharas, friend of Krishna, sakyaras, a parent of Krishna, vatsalyaras, and finally, madhuryaras. And you get to be with Krishna eternally in the spiritual world, enjoying yourself. So this is what the expert guru teaches. He doesn't simply tell you, you should enjoy this material world and I'll give you a process for enjoying the material world. That is not guru, that is go-ru. You understand the difference? Go-ru. Like a cow or an ass. The expert guru teaches you, you're not part of this world, you're connected with Krishna, how to connect with Krishna, and then what happens in the spiritual world. And so, we're very fortunate that we are representing His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada, who has presented all this information in his books, and I understand someone purchased a whole set of books today.
Yes.
Right, a whole set of Bhagavatams, which we're going to sign after the class. And that's what we need to hear. That is our real wealth. And that will give us eternal happiness, eternal life, and full knowledge. So, anyway, keep it short tonight. Does anyone have any questions? Yes.
You said three directions. One was the north, one was the Mayavad, and
yeah.
West one was mental concoction. What was the south one, where the wasp was there?
The south one was the poisonous wasp. Actually, Yamaraj is considered on the south. That's where he lives. And that's mundane morality. Mundane morality and karmakanja rituals. You know, someone may be very proud. I mean, there's other examples of that. Grandfather Bhishma, for example. He had the mundane morality. Does anyone know what his mundane morality was?
Just follow for the sake of rituals.
Yes. Yeah. So his mundane morality was specifically, does anyone remember? keeping his word, even though it went against Dharma. Because he was confronted, he made his promise to his father, I will always support the king or the emperor. And it turned out the emperor happened to be a rascal. Dhritarashtra and his ecstatic son, Duryodhana. And so he supported them against the Pandavas and against Yudhisthira Maharaj, who was, of course, one of the Pandavas, who was like the principle of religiosity. He was sometimes called Dharmaraj. He's the son of Yamaraj. And so he did something against the spiritual order and he followed mundane morality. So that's an example. Or someone who's interested in karmakanja practices. Karmakanja practices means different sacrifices that one may do for elevation to the heavenly planets, or getting mundane wealth, or getting a new car. I mean, sometimes people come to the temple, I mean, it's a funny thing, and they bring their car and they say, we want you to bless my car, the car. I mean, sometimes they even say, we want to offer our car to Krishna. And I usually say, thank you very much, the temple could use it. And they say, no, that's not what we mean. We want to offer our car and then use it for ourselves. If you offer it to Krishna, just like there was one time in Tirupati, a gentleman was offering money to the deity, Balaji, and he wanted to give his son the opportunity to drop a gold bar in the hundi. So he held his son over the hundi, and the son dropped the gold bar and the son fell into the hundi. And he said to the pujaris, can I have my son back? And they said, no. You offered him to Krishna. You can't have him back. Anything you offer. And so his son grew up and became a pujari in the temple, right? And a great devotee of Krishna. And so the father got the good benefit. So the point is that you can't really take back from Krishna. And so these karmakanja rituals are basically meant just to give you something that's really gonna, and ultimately cause you more anxiety. You know, sometimes you ask for things in this world and what you get, you may get it and it causes you more anxiety. For example, you have Draupadi in her previous life was asking for a husband, right? And she was so enthusiastic. Superseded that you want to be happy. Everybody wants to be happy. And the only thing that will make us happy is the satisfying, the loving propensity that we have in our heart. Srila Prabhupada commented that when we invest our loving propensity in material objects, we become frustrated. Prabhupada said it's like shining the light into a box. It doesn't go very far. But when you shine the light, this is simply a metaphor again, when you shine the light into the sky, you can go on unlimitedly. So when you focus your loving propensity on Krishna and the devotees, of course, and the spiritual master and the spiritual world, then your loving propensity can be expressed unlimitedly. That's Krishna consciousness. So, any other questions? Yes, Keshav.
So you were saying how once you disturb Paul the light, his feet and chariot started touching the ground.
Yeah.
Does that mean before he told the lie that he was like floating?
He was floating. Either. There's that story of Nal and Damayanti in the Mahabharata, and also it's told in Ramayana, the full Ramayana, where Damayanti, she was so beautiful, all the demigods wanted to marry her. And she wanted to marry Nal. And so the demigods tried to trick her by taking the form of Nal. Anyone heard this story before? It's an interesting story. And so she looked, couldn't figure out which one was Nal. Then she saw that Nal was sweating. And the other ones weren't sweating. So she said, that's him. And she picked him. And the demigods were so upset that she had ignored them and picked Nal that later on, both of them had to suffer. That's the whole story of Nal and Damayanti, which I don't have time to tell right now. So the dear Lord, give us this day our daily bread. And Prabhupada said, that means they're turning God into a baker. But you know, it's like your father. You know, let's say you have a good father, you're living at home, and you say, Dad, are you going to feed me today? That's like an insult, isn't it? So God is taking care of all of us. And the only reason some people are suffering more is because of bad karma. That's why they're suffering. If you don't have bad karma, then Krishna takes care of even people with bad karma. But especially people who are in Krishna consciousness, Krishna takes care of you. He'll give you what you want. Krishna says, just do bhakti, and that takes care of everything. Yasmin vigate sarvameva vigatam bhavati. And if one knows Krishna, one knows everything. And that's what we're presenting. And I've been performing or following Krishna consciousness since, as Govardhan said, 1971. Actually, earlier, I joined the movement in 1971. And I can tell you that it gets better every day. Is there anything that any of you are doing that gets better every day that's not Krishna conscious? Does your job get better every day? Do your children get better every day? Maybe, I hope so, if they're devotees. But Krishna consciousness gets better, you get happier and more fulfilled. And at the end of this life, Chaktuvadeham Purnajanma Naiti Maham Eti Sojanam. Okay, any other questions?